Thank you all for being here today to our Commissioner's Court. Do we have a volunteer who would open our time with our invocation for us? Somebody with an opening prayer? Yes. Let's all stand together, if you would, please.
Thank you very much, Judge. Heavenly Father, we just invite your presence here this morning and ask that you would just come and fill the room. Give us wisdom and discernment as we make decisions that shape the county that you have given us to look over. We just thank you today that you are one who loves us. We thank you for this wonderful country, this state, and our county, and we ask that you just continue to protect us, even as you have in this past week, and be with those who've lost, and to bless them by rescuing them, even as we have been called to walk with you in that. We thank you this morning in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Now, our pledges.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. And you may be seated. Let the record reflect that all are present here today. I have a motion to approve the Commissioner's Court agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, at this time, are there any citizens who would like to make any comments this morning as we move forward in our agenda? Yes, if you would, state your name for the record and the item on the agenda. Yeah, just come on up here to the microphone. If you'd speak into the mic, please, so we can all hear real well.
Hi, my name is Paulette Ramirez, and I'm here to thank Commissioner Metz with all the stuff that he's done to help approve the drainage system in our street in River Oaks. We're here to thank him for the hard work that he's done and hope that everything goes through as planned. And we just want to thank him for all he's done.
Thank you so much. We appreciate
been,
that.
Been a long time coming.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Are there any other citizens who would like to make any comments? If there are none, let's move on to proclamations, resolutions, and presentations. If we can, gentlemen, we've been asked to defer item number A until our next date. We weren't able to get some of the things that we needed on that. And then our historical commission presentation, Larry Forster, if you would come and give us your presentation for 2020. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I haven't seen you in a while, Judge, and I really admire your mustache, or some would say you've trained your nasal hairs. So.
Well, thank you.
Looks good. Judge and Commissioners, thank you for giving me an opportunity to do the annual report. As I'm sure you know by now, the Texas Historical Commission and the statutes of the state of Texas require our historical commission, our county historical commission, to report both to the Texas Historical Commission and to our Commissioner's Court, for whom we report to both your court and the state historical commission. In front of you is an annual report that I put together that summarizes some of the activities of 2020 for our Texas Historical Commission. We're composed of almost 30 individuals from around the county, from different walks of life, who all have one thing in common, and that is the promotion and preservation of the history of both Montgomery County and the state of Texas. I'm also put there in front of you a button that is our history road rally button for this coming weekend in Willis. I believe Commissioner Walker will be there and visit with us. It represents the oldest, probably the oldest church in Montgomery County, being the Thomas Chapel Church in Willis. They go back to 1867, shortly after the the Civil War concluded, this African-American church has been in that community for so many, many years. And many years ago, our historical commission, with the support of you, the county commissioners, were able to do some restoration of that church. So we feature that as along with many other historical sites in the greater Willis and Danville area. And we'd certainly invite anybody from the public that wants to enjoy and learn a little bit of history about North Montgomery County to do that. This past year, we were in Conroe, and as your report would show, among the clues we did was a tour of the old fifth floor jail. And we had both former sheriffs Joe Corley and Tommy Gage up there as docents, talking about the stories, including the Joe's story about pinning up Henry Lee Lucas, a serial killer that was up there. And so the people that got to go up there in the old jail really enjoyed that experience. Even though 2020 was a year where we had a lot of COVID challenges, we were able to continue working. In fact, our historical commission, we were told, was the very first historical commission in the state of Texas to conduct our meeting by Zoom. And so we continue having our virtual meetings beginning in May and throughout the year, and we still do by having a Zoom meeting, our next one being this coming Monday evening. And those are always open to the public. A couple of things I wanted to touch on is we had two ladies who have served our historical commission in the county for many years that were recognized as emeritus members. One is Gertie Spencer, who served as in my capacity as chair for 27 years. I don't intend to beat that record, but she is still involved in the historical commission, but she's become an honorary or an emeritus member. And another one is Celeste Graves, who Commissioner Riley is, like me, is just amazed at her energy at 101 going on 102 years of age. And she's still very engaged in our commission. One of the things we're doing this year that I'm excited about is we're finally going back and beginning the process of identifying and doing a historical survey of all the historical structures in Montgomery County. The last time that was done is in 1980, and we have a number of volunteers that are assisting us with that project. Last time I was here, we recognized a couple of individuals who were instrumental in the Conroe Community Cemetery, that being John Edens and John Meredith. That cemetery project continues to go on, and it's just amazing the process and the efforts they're making in that regard. And again, through the support we get from the Commissioner's Court, we were able to fund the fencing that went around it and the purchase of a survey done by Jeff Moon here in Montgomery County to assist them in identifying the boundaries so that they can in turn seek out a historical marker for that old, long-forgotten cemetery. You may remember that's the cemetery where the only Buffalo soldier known to be buried in Montgomery County is buried, that being Sergeant Luther Dorsey, along with some noted African-American educators and leaders from the Conroe and even greater Montgomery County area. So I could go on and on and on, but I think if you take a moment and just sort of scan through the minutes of and the report, it speaks for itself. I just want to conclude by thanking each and every one of you for the support I get and our commission gets, both in the funding, showing up for events. We had Robert Walker show up for an event in Montgomery back in November. We had Charlie Riley show up for an event in October when we had new historical markers for the Dean House in Magnolia, the Addison Gandy House in Montgomery. And we hope to have other historical markers popping up around both the courthouse and throughout the counties. One of the areas we'd really like to focus on this in the next 2 years is over there on the east side of the county. And we may have to recruit Commissioner Metz, because I know he knows a lot of history over there, and he can be of assistance to us to recognize Absolutely. The precious history along the old railroad system and so forth over there, and of course Fostoria and the like. So with that, I just thank you for so much for your support for our historical commission. It means a lot to us, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And if you have none, then I'll excuse myself and let you get on to the important business of the county.
gentlemen.
Larry, I just appreciate all y'all do, and I think y'all do a great job. And I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it again. We've got to keep history alive, if that's the right way to say it. We got to study history. I don't think we study it near enough. We don't even study it enough here in our own county, much less the state or the country. So I appreciate all y'all do.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yes, Larry, it's what you do seems like it's at times a thankless deal. And on behalf of the whole county, and Commissioner Riley mentioned about studying history, studying accurate history is essential. And what you do and the stuff that you come up with and the things that you send, I mean, it's remarkable. And so on behalf of all of us, thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Appreciate awesome. It very much. Look forward to working with you on some East County stuff.
Good.
Over there.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. All right, resolution in recognition of the 10th anniversary of the Montgomery County Mental Health Treatment Facility, operated by WellPath. Nelda Blair is going to come and read this resolution for us, if you would, please.
Thank you, Judge. My name is Nelda Blair. I'm local counsel for WellPath Recovery Solutions here in Montgomery County, and I have with me a group of, Jeff, why don't you come right over, a group of folks from WellPath that runs the mental health facility. Jeff Roan, his technical title is hospital administrator, but as you can only imagine over the past year or so with COVID and the past couple of weeks with the freeze, he's been much more than that. But Jeff, would you like to introduce your people before we read the resolution?
Sure. Good morning, Judge, Commissioners. Morning. Pleasure to be here this morning. I'd like to introduce Dr. Karen Nelson. She's our Director of Psychology and Forensic Services. Dr. Barbara Moore, she's our Medical Executive Director. Tam Harwell, who is our risk manager, compliance administrator, she's got three titles, and performance improvement coordinator, and Dr. Brenda LeVar, which I'm sure you all know very well and love her as much as we do.
Thank you, Jeff. Believe it or not, it's been 10 years since this facility opened, one of the really unique facilities of its kind in the state. And so we're asking you to pass this resolution. I'm going to read it. It's a little bit long, not real long, but a little bit long, but it encompasses 10 years, and we won't do it for another 10 years. So it's a resolution in recognition of the 10th anniversary of the Montgomery County Mental Health Treatment Facility operated by WellPath Recovery Solutions. Whereas the Montgomery County Mental Health Treatment Facility officially opened on March 4th, 2011, through a pioneering public-private partnership between Montgomery County, the Texas Department of State Health Services, and WellPath Recovery Solutions, with Montgomery County developing and financing the construction and WellPath operating and managing the project. And whereas the facility is a licensed psychiatric facility housing 100 beds designed to provide behavioral health services to patients who are determined by the court system to be incompetent to stand trial, with the ultimate goals of complete patient transformation and recovery and restoration to competency. And whereas to accomplish this goal for each individualized patient requires the highest quality of care, assessment, treatment planning, psychiatric services, competency restoration, integrated treatment for psychiatric and substance disorders, court reports, court testimony, psychosocial rehabilitation, discharge planning, medical care, pharmacy, and nutrition services. And whereas through WellPath's decades of extensive experience in the operation and management of forensic hospitals, WellPath has pursued that ultimate goal by creating a secure and therapeutic environment that promotes patient choice and tailors treatment to meet individual needs based on the combined expertise of not only the patient, but a treatment team including a psychiatrist and nurse, recovery plan coordinator, social worker, forensic psychologist, peer support specialist, psychiatric nursing assistant, an educational program, a psychotherapy program, and encouraging the support and participation of family, friends, and other individuals selected by the patient. And whereas through its exceptional management and staff, from the administration to the kitchen, from the front desk to the back door, from the nurses to the groundskeepers, and from the exam room to the corporate boardroom, this facility has experienced significant achievements, including it was the first newly constructed inpatient hospital for state psychiatric patients in decades, admitted 95 patients within the first 3 months of opening, interviewed, hired, and completed comprehensive orientation for 175 new staff in 120 days. Licensed as a psychiatric hospital by DSHS within 90 days of application, achieved the Joint Commission accreditation within 90 days of opening and consistently for 10 years. Recognized by the Joint Commission as a top performer on key quality measures. Established a hospital advisory board comprised of community leaders, representing healthcare, education, elected officials, and most importantly, provided competency restoration to more than 3,300 persons from 79 Texas counties.
Wow.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Commissioners Court of Montgomery County recognizes the 10th anniversary of opening and operation of Montgomery County Mental Health Treatment Facility and commends and thanks each one of the national, state, and especially local members of WellPath Recovery Solutions for all they do to continue the important work of caring for vulnerable members of the Montgomery County and Texas communities. You'll be signing that at today's date. We'll bring you back a decorative one for us to sign so we can have it framed. If you would do that, we would appreciate it, Commissioners.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Wow. That is amazing. We appreciate you coming up. Appreciate you taking the time to read that to us.
Thank you, Judge.
It's got to remind us of all that has taken place in the last 10 years. Do we have a motion to accept this? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all. Yeah. Thank you all for being here today. We appreciate it so much. All right.
Well, before we move on,
go ahead.
I want to recognize someone else that's sitting up here with us today. Today is Commissioner Nowak's birthday.
Oh.
We can either put him on the spot and he can sing happy birthday, or we can sing happy birthday. We don't have to do either one of them.
I'd like to do both. I'd like to hear him sing happy birthday.
No, you would.
Hey, Raymond, would you lead us in happy birthday year?
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Come on, Raymond.
Let me just put you on the spot, too.
That's just wrong. We do it at my house. You know, I got, you know, 10 kids at the house, so we sing it a lot. So
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear James. Happy birthday to you. All right. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Raymond. I didn't mean to, but you did just fine. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Raymond, thank you very much.
All right. Let's move on in our agenda, consent agenda. As we move forward, are there any items that you all would either like to defer or would you like to move to open?
Move on consent.
Okay. But before we do that, I've got a couple items that I would. Can I do that, Commissioner?
Sure. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I would like to defer 9E2, which is on page 3 of 10.
9E2 defer.
On page 3 of 10.
Contract issue.
And on the consent, and that's going to be deferred. And then 9Q1 is on page 7 of 10, which will also be deferred. Okay. And then I want to move two items to open. That's 9E4C and 9E5. Both are on page 4 of 10.
Page 4 of 10.
Okay, which ones are they?
They're purchasing 9E4C and 9E5. Those we move to open. They're on page 4 of 10 under purchasing. All right. If there are no more modifications, we have a motion. Do we have a motion to approve consent with modifications, Commissioner Nowak?
Yes, move.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Let's go ahead and move to our open agenda, and we'll start with 9E4C. Gilbert?
Hi, good morning. Happy birthday.
Thank you. 9E4C.
This is a project to for our AV Zoom room support, and we've got the proposal, we've got the agreement ready, we just need a funding source for that work. It's $162,040, and that's for 1 year support, and it's broken up in quarters. So if after quarter number two we're good, we're done.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I haven't had a chance to talk to Bobby this morning, so I don't know.
Or do we need to, do we have a funding source?
I haven't heard from IT that they have a funding source. But if you were wanting to pull it out of contingency, your anticipated contingency balance for the end of February is going to be $577,918.
That's after we pull it out or before?
That's before.
577 what?
918. It's on the sheet that I passed out for another agenda item.
Oh.
Okay.
At one point in time, there was conversation of trying, we don't technically have CARES Act dollars anymore, but trying to, majority of this equipment was installed because of COVID. And the issue that we're facing is we have all this wonderful technology and people are having trouble utilizing it. And so we need somebody here to help keep it running and do the updates and go through those procedures that really IT just, they're not equipped to do because of the complexity of the technology. So is there a way to use some of the, I just, with $577,000,
the reassign money from CARES that we do and move that back into either general fund or contingency.
So if you were to do that and Rakesh was to be okay with it, we would basically be taking that out of fund balance.
Fund balance.
Okay, is that better for you?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
That would be the
sure. Yeah. I would entertain a motion to do that out of fund balance. Okay. That was our name of source. Okay, would you just like to make that? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Gilbert?
And I will file a budget amendment at the next commissioner's court for that.
And thank you.
Gilbert, on this
yes,
one,
sir.
If we could, I'd like to move into executive session just because of the contract issue regarding this. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think we should discuss this in open.
Okay. Let's go ahead. Let's adjourn right now.
If I may, Commissioner, my suggestion was going to be to approve this pending the final agreement being negotiated.
That acceptable then?
And that way, because this is our standard terms.
I'd rather talk about it
okay,
first.
That's fine. Yeah.
And then that way we can.
I think if
you would just give us, it won't take long, but I think we need to go to executive session on that.
Okay.
So then the court then is going to recess for executive session pursuant to one or more of the following provisions of Texas Government Code, to wit, Chapter 551, Subchapter D, Articles 551.071.
Will you, Gilbert, join us?
Give us a few minutes and we'll be right back.
Yes.
On item number 5, do I have a motion to approve, subject to vote in favor of, subject to county attorney's
approval of terms of the agreement.
Move.
Second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, thank you.
Now, I'd like to also make an amendment, if I may, to move another item to open that has come up, and that is 9E3, which is just above on that same page to open. And so what I would like to do is make a motion to amend and then reapprove the consent agenda with this modification. Do I have a motion to that effect?
Move.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Abstain.
Opposed?
I abstain.
Okay. Motion carries. All right. 9E3. Commissioner Metz.
I think he just abstained on
the consent.
So we got to redo it. That means everything would have to be signed.
So here's what we're going to do. Commissioner Metz would like to abstain from the Haggerty contract because he's a family member that works for Haggerty, and he has abstained from all of those votes. He didn't realize that contract was going through on consent, and so he would like to abstain from that. So we are pulling that item from the consent agenda. We're going to vote on it separately now, and I think Commissioner Nowak wants to make a motion.
It is now on open.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'll second.
Commissioner Nowak, you've made the motion in a second. All in favor?
Abstain.
Motion carries.
Right. So we have 4 ayes and an abstention, and the consent motion stays how it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry for the inconvenience.
So much. All right. All right, then let's move to our open agenda. The court will consider, discuss, discretion, take action on the following items. We're going to start with emergency management. Jason Millsaps.
Good morning, Judge Commissioners. Commissioner, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I have some cake for you over at the vaccine site if you'd like to come have some.
some vaccine cake.
Some of our food bank cake.
Well, it was there before the freeze.
So, under item A, consider discuss take all appropriate action regarding winter storm emergency and related events, disaster declarations, and effects to Montgomery County. I have one item that's being passed over from the clerk. It's the R&O prepared that will ratify and extend the disaster declaration related to this storm that Judge Keogh signed. The governor signed his declaration on February the 11th, so we're covered under that master declaration from the governor starting February 11th for all our offices and all the extra work sanding the trucks you guys put on the roads ahead of time to prepare and winterize. And then Judge Keogh signed the declaration on Wednesday the 17th, which gave us time to have court today to ratify that. So that's before us now. That would ratify it for 30 days to allow us to keep our emergency plan in place.
All right.
Will this go along with what Commissioner Nowak did over here? We'll be able to pay our...
I have another item. I'd have another item to that effect here in just a minute, okay. Commissioner.
All right.
Okay, do we have a motion to... Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I'll go all out right. of my order if you'd like.
All right. If we could, just real quick, Jason. As it relates to the disaster declaration, BD, I have a question. If you could come up and answer a couple questions for us here real quick. Because as we move forward and there are a number of power companies involved, is there any do we have any legal recourse as a county with our power companies as it relates to any kind of damages at all? And can we take any action on behalf of our constituents or our businesses as a county as a result of damages to this?
Well, we're still looking into that, but the initial result is probably going to be, my understanding is that the increases in the allowed kilowatt hours was done through the Texas Public Utility Commission. And so it's not an issue of price gouging like you normally see for essentials under the Act, where we might have the ability to go out and go against companies with regard to that. So at this point, I think it's going to resolve to either the state or the federal government to do something with regard to it, most likely the state of Texas, because we're a deregulated state from an energy standpoint, and the Public Utility Commission was the one who gave the emergency order to allow those rates to go up. So they had some authority to do that. I do understand the governor's looking into it, but at the county level, I think we will be hard-pressed to find a way to have the authority to do anything.
Judge, right. I appreciate you looking into that, and I will say, as you and I think everybody up here knows, that while the effects of having power turned off, and that's what happened, it was turned off during the storm, was... really, it exacerbated an already
painful,
serious issue.
Yeah.
I will say that it was nice to have the experience of Sally Rayner and Entergy and somebody that was proactive in keeping us informed.
Sure.
We never did hear anything from the other energy provider.
Nope.
I don't know what happened.
We had three meetings a day by phone with Entergy provider.
While we may not have liked what happened, at least they were trying to be proactive and tell us what was going on and continuing to keep us updated. And on the other side of that, I whatever the state can do, whatever needs to happen for us to, we need to be able to generate more power in the state of Texas. We are the leader of power generation in the country, I believe. And, maybe 24% wind energy isn't going to cut it. Maybe the technology is not there. I talked with some of our legislators and asked, instead of coming at these energy providers with a hammer, should there be some sort of an incentive to build more power plants? And we're lucky that, the Lewis
Sure.
Creek power plant came online. Now, there was some winterization issues that shut it down. But seems to me that more power plants are going to be needed to keep up with the demand that we have here.
Be nice to see the $18 billion spent on wind subsidies over the last 10 years be redirected to power generation creation. So natural gas would be nice.
Thank you.
I'm going to go out of order, so I'll take care of Commissioner Metz's item that he was just bringing up.
Okay.
As you recall, on consent, Commissioner Nowak had an item similar to this, and it's consider and discuss take appropriate action regarding paying out disaster PTO earned by employees who worked during the disaster at the discretion of the elected official or department head and name a funding source for such payments. This would, for instance, in my case in emergency management, the employees that worked during that disaster time have accumulated close to 90 hours of disaster PTO. I can't afford to have them off work, myself included, for over the next 90 days to utilize those disaster PTO times. So it'd be easier to pay that out to allow our operations to continue as planned without having to schedule 3 weeks of time off in there for employees working during the disaster.
I think there might be an issue with the exempt employees first.
No, that's item B. I'm still on item A.
Say that again, Amy. Into the microphone as loud as you can.
Under consider discuss take appropriate action regarding emergency and related events.
Okay.
For declarations and effects to the county.
I understand. So we're going to put the rest with Commissioner Nowak's item. It's a very similar item, but it's for all county or?
It's at the discretion of the court. Commissioner Nowak wanted to do his separate and no matter what, take care of it. If the court decides to pay for it with a different funding source, I have confirmed with the state of Texas it is reimbursable from FEMA under this claim. 75% of it at least is reimbursable. So if they decide to appoint a funding source for that for expected reimbursement from FEMA, then we could pull Commissioner Nowak's under the same funding source, or he can leave his alone, however y'all want to do it.
So are you telling me that anybody that worked during this freeze or whatever we're going to, this disaster, that we can...
We're going to be able to pay them overtime?
Yeah, so overtime's a separate item, but overtime's covered under FEMA as non-budgeted item for the disaster, reimbursable up to 75%, and the disaster PTO is also is reimbursable from FEMA up to 75%.
So the people that actually had to work when the county was closed down,
correct,
we're going to be able to pay those guys.
If you guys decide to do so.
You can choose to pay it. Whether or not it's reimbursable, one, should not be discussed because the way FEMA reimburses, it reimburses pursuant to your current policy.
Right.
And so this is a deviation from your policy. So the likelihood of this being reimbursable, which shouldn't matter either way, is very slim. Slim to none, actually, because it deviates from the policy, which is not to pay out disaster time. Commissioner Nowak said that he would like to pay his people. If you would like to allow department heads or other county employees to receive that and you would like to name a funding source, you could do so.
But it would not come from FEMA?
It would not come from FEMA.
It deviates from the policy.
It deviates from the policy, and it was not the policy in effect at the time of the event.
That's not talking about overtime. It's just the disaster.
So you would basically have to name a funding source.
You would need to name a funding source. And if you would like, we could bring this back in 2 weeks and put an item to see what that would look like, how much you are funding.
I do want to bring that back. Okay. I don't believe it's right.
Please talk about this.
I never have thought it was right. When the county was shut down for the people that had to work to either be penalized by taking days off, losing their time and a half, I've never agreed with that. So I don't agree with any of that. So if we can pay these guys, I'm all for it.
Okay.
2 weeks is not a problem. That actually give the treasurer time to accumulate how many hours that
exactly
works out.
So what it would do, what that would look like is all the people who worked would be entering that time. We would know, and you could be actually taking action on a finite number of people who worked during that disaster, and that would also be.
Everybody needs to understand, we're talking about law enforcement, we're talking about
all departments.
All departments.
We're talking about everybody.
So the item would mirror what Commissioner Nowak did for his, except for allow for department heads and elected officials.
And then we also need to know the non-exempt versus exempt, because we had both groups of employees will be working on that as well.
Okay, so there are some things we need to know before we move forward on this.
We wouldn't report it this time at all. Judge,
right.
We would bring this back in 2 weeks.
That's what I was going to say. Let's defer this and bring it back in 2 weeks. Okay.
And we do still
I do need,
need
some discretion, direction. Come on. A little bit of direction will help us.
I need direction on whether or not we're looking at just exempt or just non-exempt or exempt as well.
So Commissioner Nowak's was non-exempt
his,
only.
His motion was for non-exempt only, and so exempt employees would still need to burn that disaster PTO after the fact. This is not paying them for the overtime that they work. This is the PTO bank.
Can we pay exempt employees if we...
Not without another policy change, because you pay exempt employees salary to work all the time anyway.
Right.
Whether they are working or not working.
If people want to pay exempt employees, we've done that once before during...
Yeah, we did it during Harvey.
We did it before.
We've done it once before during Harvey.
To be clear, this would not be overtime.
This is just straight time.
I understand.
Employees, yeah. And just in my department alone, I have 4 exempt employees that work 90-plus hours while we were closed. So they have 90-plus hours of disaster PTO on the books that they have to burn in the next 90 days during COVID and vaccine sites and everything. I can't afford to do that. So these folks are either going to lose that time or the court decides to pay it out.
I don't want to complicate this any more than what it is, but I think we need to offer you could either have your time off or we can pay you. I think that's what we need. And
I think in 2 weeks the court needs to make that determination for how the countywide is going to make that, so we don't have certain departments doing one thing and other departments doing others.
If
with
we
payroll.
Could do this, if we could do this, let's look at both of these exempt and non-exempt,
okay,
and let's get back together in 2 weeks and decide what we want to do. Can we do that?
I can get the data. The good news is with timekeeping in the new system, we actually already have the data. It's just going to take getting through this first payroll to pull it and get you the numbers.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
All right. I'm still on item A. Let me move back. Please consider and discuss authorize emergency management to spend funds related to the disaster and respond and mitigate future damages or loss of life not to exceed $50,000. Name a funding source. Last week we did spend funds. I'm still working with the secretary to try to figure out exactly how much. I believe what we spent last week and what we're continuing to spend to acquire supplies, water, and things like that will not exceed $50,000 in total for the entire disaster for the county. So
that the funding source would be what, contingency?
Contingency or fund balance, your choice.
Yeah.
And this, again, is for what, Jason? One more time.
So as soon as the disaster, we went into effect, the OEM started purchasing water, portable toilets, hand washing stations, you name it, we had to get it. We had the jail didn't have water. We had to put portables there. Joy Corley didn't have water. We put portables there. Hospitals, we started shuttling water from the River Authority's water system at the lake back and forth, so we had to rent water buffaloes, and there was just number of supplies we had to do. We had to, very early on, hard to get water. We had to acquire and buy water locally from all the grocery stores, warehouses, and everywhere we could get it locally, so it was easy to ship across the county. As Tietam finally opened the roads and as the state got moving, we were able to get water from in larger quantities for free from the state. But we are still purchasing some water as they've run out of supplies again. So,
got it. Are you still looking for water?
At this moment, we've got 5 truckloads of water. I think that would be right at 100 pallets of water that we've received. We're expected to get another 5 by the end of the week. So we're in the non-buying water business. We're just finishing up what we approved to purchase last week in the height of the emergency.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
A move. We do this out of fund balance, right?
Yeah, this part is reimbursable from FEMA. It's 75% reimbursable.
Which one?
Contingency or fund balance?
Contingency,
please.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a true contingency item.
Yeah, correct.
Okay,
we have a motion. Is there a second? All in favor?
Opposed?
Motion carries. Thank you, Jason.
Yes, sir. Item B. Consider, discuss, take appropriate action to authorize overtime payments for hours worked during the winter storm emergency for non-exempt employees. Please name a funding source. Activity logs and equipment logs will be required by the auditor for payment. This is specifically to the overtime earned by staff across the county. That would be law enforcement, the commissioner's offices. I don't have any in OEM other than maybe a few employees, any of the public safety offices, and especially the fire marshal's office, who not only helped us respond to the disaster, but because of the call volume, had 34 fires that they're still currently investigating with overtime. So,
don't we always pay overtime? I mean, I know that some of the commissioners don't, but Sheriff's Department, I mean,
So some of these departments don't have a budget for this overtime.
Right, the fire marshal probably doesn't have an overtime budget.
Do you know how much it is?
I do not have a dollar amount.
And they're probably still responding.
Marshal's office is still responding to this. I can't speak for y'all's offices and what you're doing, but I know law enforcement's kind of slowed down, but the fire marshal's office is still full steam trying to catch up to the call volume and all the investigations they're working on, plus what they did for us during hauling water and picking up supplies all last week. So,
given the nature of the hours that we're talking about here for non-exempt employees, it's not something we can put off for 2 weeks either, is it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Unless it was already coded in there.
Unless it was already coded, but those are the departments that have the budget.
They pay
for
overtime.
It.
Correct.
Okay. Then we would move to what is already accounted for, that you already have made allowance for, to pay that, but then to determine how we're going to move forward on this particular item, where the money's going to come from.
I personally would rather you can approve the item if you want. I don't think at this point I would not define a funding source. And I say that because we watch salary and benefits quite close. And so if we need to do some transfers at the end of the year, that's normally when we end up doing those. So don't think you need to name anything now. Let's kind of see how vacancy, because part of this also is part of the vacancy savings calculation for these departments.
I move then.
What is the motion?
Are we just deferring it?
You still have to actually authorize the overtime because
we're not naming.
But you just don't know how much it is yet.
Well, not only that, but for instance, like the fire marshal office, they have zero budget for overtime. So how would we handle that
if I may, hold on just a second. I just mentioned a second ago that which we have already coded and we know,
correct,
would be paid. That which we don't know, we'll defer to the next meeting and figure out where we need to move forward. Can we do it that way?
I would say yes. You do. From a timekeeping standpoint. So fire marshal's office is a great example. They don't have the overtime budget. So in the system, they've coded their time to comp time.
They do have an overtime budget, though.
Well, they're coding it to comp time right now. And because they're not sure funding. And so they end up using that comp, whereas they might want it paid out. And they specifically told me they were coding it to comp to wait and see what happened with this agenda item.
And in making the approval today, and I talked with Jimmy specifically on this, is he doesn't allow his guys to carry comp time. So they will start shifting schedules around to burn this comp time for this disaster, and there's a lot of it. So if the court at least says we are going to pay out that overtime, he won't have to do that. Over the next 2 weeks, the court will come back with more information and get that paid out, and they will know that comp time earned during this disaster is going to be paid out versus sit on the books and accumulate the liability of the county.
So the motion would be to that which we have coded and we know how it's going to be paid, to pay that, and that which there is some contingency involved as part of this motion, to put that off to the next agenda and bring it up in our next next commissioner's court.
The departments that pay overtime, that's
well, I'm saying we have a motion.
I'm trying to get clarification from Amy on, is it needed?
But come here.
We already pay it every time, those departments. All we need to do is defer that.
That's what I'm saying. It's an open.
Right. I'm.
If we may, let me restate my motion.
Okay.
And then I'll look for a second, and then we'll have discussion. And if we need to redo it, we'll do it. Okay? So that which we already have, the motion is I would move that with that which we've already have coded, paid according to how we already pay it. That which there is still some question about, which is what we're talking about, the fire marshal or whatever the situation may be, move that just like we did the other item to the next court. That way we can do whatever we need to do to make it correct. And that's the motion. Is there a second on that? Is there? Or is everybody just kind of waiting for discussion? Because if there's not, then it's going to die for lack of a second.
Okay.
Hang on a second. It's not dead yet. Okay. So the motion dies for lack of a second. All right. Proceed.
Amy, so what would...
How would we do this, Amy?
So, I mean, what Amanda is saying is that the budgets, including the fire marshal's budget, has an overtime budget set up for it. Whether or not they're coding to it, Melanie, I don't know. And I don't see the fire marshal in here.
Is he here?
Oh, there he is.
Yay, Kevin.
Thanks for stepping
up at the beginning of this.
As long as we're going to keep talking about your department, would you like to weigh in on what your budgetary concerns are for this ice storm?
So we have a small overtime budget for our ATF special deputies.
Okay.
So when they work overtime with ATF, ATF reimburses us for that overtime. That was what that was set up for. Our inspection division, I don't believe, has a budget for that. It's only
And their budget is inherently more complicated because when they get certain fees, those revenues are allocated to those services. When they set up, it's very task-oriented within their budget.
If,
so certain training is expected, inspections are expected, they generate revenue. All of those money have to go back into inspections and things like that. So if there's what he's saying is there's not an overtime budget for those people are not usually coding to overtime.
Yes.
And so right now they're coding to comp time.
Correct.
And if we would like them to do something different, I think it's substantially noticed at this time to say we can do that and we will name a funding source within the next 2 weeks.
Okay, so.
I think what you're saying is you don't have
okay, to everybody needs to speak in the mic because this is extremely confusing and we have to reduce this to minutes. So if you're going to speak into a microphone, speak clearly, speak slowly, because this is not good right now.
So, Amy, to clarify, would it be easier to say authorize the overtime as coded currently and future payments related to comp time as it was coded on the books for this payroll period?
Yes.
Do I have a motion?
I move.
Second.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Proceed. C.
Bear with me. I'm making sure I don't miss one. I don't want to have to come back up here. Consider, discuss, and take appropriate action regarding prioritization and distribution of COVID-19 vaccines. Since we were closed last week with the weather, this week we are doing almost triple the vaccines that we've been doing. Commissioner Noack, I apologize in advance for the traffic, and Commissioner Riley at 242.
I thought St. Luke's was going away and we were going to Wood Forest.
I'm getting there. Bear with me. We're almost there. So we're doing 12,000 shots this week at the fairgrounds location alone. St. Luke's is going to do close to 6,000. The traffic is a nightmare right now. We're working on it. Wood Forest Stadium is not open for us to move into just yet. Herman has it until March the 1st.
Oh,
and they're going to do their last second doses this Friday and Saturday out of Herman. And here comes the big decision from the court that I've been prepping you guys for a couple weeks. Darren has worked to find out the cost, what it would take to maintain the site as is that Herman set up with that vendor, and it's $180,000 a month with Aztec. We believe we can do it for a lot less, not half, but close. We're moving some of the duplicate tents and services that they have, using some of our preferred vendors on tents and buildings and outhouses and porta potties and things like that, and reducing that cost. And we believe we can get it down to about $130,000 a month to maintain Wood Forest Stadium. Wood Forest Stadium would be a consolidated location. The fairgrounds, St. Luke's, everything would go to Wood Forest Stadium, and it would get the traffic handled in those locations, and we would use that site for Lone Star Family Health, St. Luke's, Herman, Methodist, and the Public Health District. Everybody would go through that location.
You do it all at Wood Forest? Is what
you do it all at Wood Forest.
Yeah. Why don't we just leave it at Lone Star? I mean, that's where we are at now. Leave it at the fairgrounds. People know
we're in
at
a temporary facility right now at the fairgrounds because the fair is going on, and today is our first day there. I have, according to my text messages, I have traffic 3 miles long. I have not been out there to see it just yet. The temporary facility definitely reduces my capacity and output compared to what we were doing there. However, we're going to be stuck in this temporary facility with Wood Forest open for at least 4 weeks to allow all the first shots to come back for their second shot at the same location they received their first. And then we'll move first shots starting next week at Wood Forest if we get to open there, so we can keep them in that one spot as well.
When do Walgreens and CVS start giving this?
So they're starting, but the numbers they're receiving from allocation is 100, 200 a week. It's minuscule in the amount. In fact, Lone Star and St. Luke's are seeing an increase in allocations this week, and the state before the storm was preparing us to triple. I don't know if that's going to happen on time now.
we can handle the volume at Wood Forest. We could handle the volume at the previous location at the fairgrounds. I'm just not comfortable yet saying I can handle it at my temporary location because I haven't seen it in action yet.
Where's the temporary location?
Right across the street at the airport. We had it set up and everything this morning before I came here, and line was already lining up, but I have not seen them in operation yet. Darren actually left to go take care of that.
Well, I've already heard that St. Luke's, both service roads are at least a mile long.
Yeah, so
chaos. Already.
It's chaos down
there. We got to move those guys. They got to go to Wood Forest.
So the problem.
What do you want to do? This is your deal.
We need to move to Wood Forest. The issue of the money is we have got money from FEMA.
Right.
That last time we decided as a court that
2 weeks ago the court took action on this to use fund balance for vaccine related stuff. That's fine. That's the will of the court. However, vaccines is a separate FEMA program that's 100% reimbursable. So whatever the court decides to do, auditor in our office, we are gathering all of our receipts. We are doing things just like we would a FEMA claim. At the end of this, we could just come back and the court could decide whether to continue to use the fund balance to pay for this or to submit a claim to FEMA for the 100% reimbursement.
I don't think we need to take one thing away from Wood Forest. If we've got that kind of capacity out there, we don't need
leave it as is.
We need to leave it as is, and if it's $180,000,
I would need a motion to authorize OEM to maintain that, if not amount to exceed $180,000 per month.
I'll make that motion.
And name a funding source.
Is there any discussion? Okay.
Fund balance?
For now. Okay.
Well, I think the court decided.
The previous motion.
We had previously decided on the fund balance.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there any more discussion? I do want to say this is the most convenient, most sensible. I think you're right. We get it done the quickest without having to remake the
And it would allow us to take over March 1 versus having to wait a week to move our stuff around and stuff.
And we have the resources to do it.
Yes, we do.
Okay. We have a motion, a second. Is there any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Yes.
Jason, we appreciate it so much. And on behalf of all of us, what you've done and Darren's done and everybody has done, it's remarkable.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely remarkable. Thank you.
I want to give kudos to Emergency Management and Homeland Security over this last week with the freeze, all the help that Darren.
Absolutely.
Darren was right on. I mean, he was there right on Johnny on the spot.
Yep.
He took care of a couple things for us. Jason and Judge, I thank y'all for coming out and help us distribute water. I mean, it was a rough week, but I think we see the light at the end of the tunnel, and
sure.
We're going to come out of this like we always do.
Well, we'll be, hopefully, if traffic allows me, I'll be out in East County this afternoon for the water distribution. We're going to continue doing those as you guys hear from your constituents need more water. Let us know, myself or Darren or Mark or Chris, and let us know what you need. We'll put it together. And on top of everything else we're doing with vaccines and everything else, with the food bank and all the volunteers, we'll make it happen. So.
Oh, yeah. I left the food bank. I should have never done that.
Yeah. Food bank.
Done a great job,
yeah.
Too.
Awesome.
Yeah, they really have.
A huge
awesome.
Partner. Yeah. So.
I'm sorry about this. I apologize to the food bank. They were right at the top.
Yeah. They were right
really
there.
Were.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate it, Jason, so much. Constable Precinct 3.
Good morning, Judge,
morning.
Commissioners.
Good morning.
Hope you guys are doing well. Let me pass out some stuff to you here.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Good to see you. Yes, sir, Constable.
How are you?
I'm sorry. We can share.
Gentlemen, I'd like to discuss item A. Consider, discuss, and if appropriate, approve funding for one replacement vehicle in the amount of $29,213. And to discuss that amount has increased to $30,443. We secured the cheapest pickup truck we could find originally at the end of December, and it was apparently vandalized on the dealership parking lot to a degree that it was totaled. So they gave us the next cheapest vehicle quote at $30,443, which was a difference of $1,230. So for Constable Precinct 3, funding from contingency where prior vacancy dollars were transferred out of departmental budget, please authorize the budget office to effectuate any necessary changes.
All right. I'll make a motion to that effect.
Good.
We have a second.
Second.
All right. Discussion. All right. If there's no discussion, all in favor?
Judge, I did pass out for you guys. I did a little bit of analysis from the budget office side on the constable's budget. The vacancy savings that we calculated from October through February was $6,208 without benefits. Okay, so there's on top of that, there is some benefits piece of that. If we look at their budget as a whole, which I think the constable has also kind of presented something similar, we see that the budget overall from October through February is under their salary lines are over under budget by about $15,700. And then their overtime is a little bit over what their budget is, but some of that we know is going to be reclassed out of their department. The other thing that we need to think about for this the constable's budget is that he does have quite a few employees that are going to step. Now, not all of these employees are currently in the constable's main budget. They may be in his, he has quite a few contract billings, so he works with the township and some MUDs for some constable deputies there as well. But we do have to consider that some of those are going to step. And when an employee steps, law enforcement, that's about an average of a 5% increase for that law enforcement officer.
Right.
So we need to keep that in mind too. So I've provided you a list of those employees. Now those are deputies underneath the constable. They may be in subunit billings. They may be in the regular constable's budget, but all of those people are also going to step. So just kind of give you an idea, I think he has a little bit of extra money in his budget, but I'm not comfortable saying that he has the full amount that the constable is saying. So it's just a little bit of a difference of I'm a little bit more conservative in some of the numbers. I'm looking at it on a month to month and also on an annual basis.
I got you. But the difference would be we have the money in contingency to do this.
That's correct.
You're needing the truck is what you're saying.
I need the truck, yes, sir, to replace an old vehicle that's unsafe to drive. It's a maintenance issue, and I just need it replaced, or I wouldn't be here asking for
it. It's not going into patrol. It's going to be this, because earlier when we talked, I thought the story was a little different, that you had someone driving a patrol vehicle that you would like to put in a truck so that car could go into patrol. So this will be retired.
Good information. We have a Tahoe that's going down. This gives us an opportunity to move a truck into a position that helps with the maintenance of things, take a patrol vehicle that deputy is currently driving to replace the Tahoe that we need replaced. So
one will be sold. It'll go to auction. One of these vehicles you will be getting rid of.
Yes.
Okay.
So to catch up with Amanda here, as of today, the budget has not changed with what you see, the spreadsheet that I provided you all. Currently, we're sitting roughly with $55,719 in the unused salary bank under district patrol.
Constable, without trying to cut you off.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because we have a motion. We have a second.
Perfect.
We have a funding source. You think we should just vote on this, or would you like
agreed,
to keep?
Let's do it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. All right, let's move on. Community development. Dr. Ducharme, are you there? You go. Come on up. Thank you, Constable.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
I brought my phone up here because I just got a text. I have somebody that texted me right before court and said she was 3 miles back in the line at the airport for a shot. She then texted me and said 90 minutes and we're almost to the first tent. 5 lines are moving very smoothly.
So Jason is leaving to go help with that right now.
No, they've got it under control and it's doing
awesome.
Great. And now
great.
She's just told me she got her shot.
Awesome.
Everything's good. She was very excited about it.
At the airport?
At our airport.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is what we're doing right now.
So she made it through a 3-mile line in 90 minutes. And that is just amazing. And I'm sorry he left because I just...
We will pass it on.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have a PowerPoint. So it's only 6 slides. Okay, I'll start by reading the motion, which is to consider and approve the proposed COVID-19 Emergency Financial Assistance Implementation Plan for administering the current assistance programs to help unemployed households throughout the county.
Do we have a motion to that effect? Do we have a motion? She's given us the motion to make. Discussion's coming.
I move.
Second. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there discussion?
Yes.
Joanne?
Okay.
Proceed.
I sent you guys a draft of this plan a couple of weeks ago. There have been some changes to it. And I apologize for the smallness, and I'm not really good with PowerPoint on my own. These are the current 8 grants. We are expecting to receive additional funds from CDBG, even over and above this, $25 million. And we also think that we're going to be getting some funds for the SNOVID, what we're calling last week, the ice storm. So as you can see, the grants vary all over the place in terms of the requirements for them and the amount of money involved. We had come to court before and asked that we make my two temps from before permanent because at that point we knew that we would be able to handle the first 6 or 7 grants on this list, 6 of them. Since then, 2 more have been added, and one of them is $18 million, and I'm just not going to be able to handle that with, you know, 2 people. So that's the key thing. This chart demonstrates that we are all over the place in terms of what's allowed, how long we have to get the money up, and who qualifies for the grants. We ran a new needs assessment. We had 10,000 households that had not been contacted by a nonprofit. Our nonprofits in all this time assisted 1,756 households. So we're proposing to bring the programs back in-house where we've got better control and can move it faster. The nonprofits have not agreed to take more funding as a rule, and some of them have given back money that they already had from CDBG. CARES, of course, is over with.
Mm-hmm.
The TRAP pilot program, which is for the eviction diversion, was a pilot program, and we were instructed that whatever money we got, we should send to the BVCOG because they were doing that pilot. The pilot ended. That's now back in-house. That's one of the new ones for us. So we sent out 10,000 letters, and we got 3,316 responses, asking people who were on the original application list from July, do you still need help? So 33% have told us, yes, they still need help. We got more than that in responses because we did have people calling and saying, we don't need help anymore, or we just were interested in that $500 thing. So that is the reality that we think that we're going to have maybe 3,500 apply, and as you can see on the prior screen, we think we can help about 2,700 households.
Joanne, what are you asking in this motion? What are you asking in A?
I'm asking you to approve this plan, which puts all of the grants not together financially, but puts them under the same organizational structure and allows us to make decisions based on these criteria for who gets funded with what grant.
Would that then cover the funding you're going to be requesting for item number B and hiring 5 temporary employees to assist with these?
B is for the staff to implement this plan. I have to have a plan first, and then I need help assist in implementing the plan. So B is the staffing to implement this plan at A.
Why would your nonprofits not want to participate in this? What are their reasoning?
They have incredible assistance fatigue at this point.
Why are they refusing the money, basically?
Because several of our agencies are run by volunteers only, or they have very small staffs. and they are extremely fatigued, and their volunteers are burned out from the CARES Act and the first round of CDBG funds, and one after another, they're all saying no.
So if you've asked...
Part of it in East County, you know, we had all this money to give away over there, and the criteria is so high, they didn't meet the threshold on some of it. And so it was a noble gesture and all, but the threshold is so high that
yeah, but a lot of them didn't. But the threshold is not her problem. The threshold is not her fault.
Okay.
Well, no, but we met and changed some of that. Remember, we met and changed some of that threshold.
We dropped the threshold's just to the floor. Yeah. Well, everything that we could drop, we did.
Well, hold on. It was that, and it was documentation, and some of these. I don't like how it's worded that these nonprofits are refusing. Basically, they're refusing to help people. That's not true.
Absolutely
not.
That is
a slap in the face to the people that are working their tails off. Wait, you did say something similar to that.
And I apologize if I said it that way. I didn't realize that was inadvertent. What I mean is they do not want to continue with these programs.
Well, but I don't know. I haven't been given the opportunity to check with some of these nonprofits myself to ask them. My knowledge, we haven't asked them recently if they want any of this other money. The reason it didn't work so well the first time is because what Judge Metz said, the documentation was too much and the thresholds were too high. We didn't lower it until towards the end of the program. And talking with
right.
the auditor, this is something that he feels that is better run by the nonprofits and bringing it into the county.
They know the need.
Exactly.
They know the people.
And I would prefer to work a program with our nonprofits, try to get them back involved instead of continually trying to empire build and grow, get more and more employees.
I'm asking for temps. They go away when the grants go away.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Dr. Deshawn, last time we did that, we all agreed to do it based on that, and then you came back to the court and asked them to become permanent, and they became permanent.
Correct.
Matter of fact, two of us voted against it. That's not the issue here, though. The issue is I think that the commissioner has brought up for us to make a decision on this right now. First of all, on the first one, which we have a motion and a second on, now we come to find out that what we do in B is the two are intimately connected. Okay, and rather than move forward this with the possibility of hiring these extra people. There still needs to be some research, apparently, with some of these. Can we put this off till the next Commissioner's Court meeting and do a little research on this to make sure that we're on the right page, not all on the same page here?
This is no different to me than when we try to fund our nonprofits during our budget workshop. You know, right. We can either try to do this program or we can depend on those guys. Somebody's going to do this. Somebody's going to have to do or try to have to do this. So if we're saying that the nonprofits are not interested in helping us, which I don't know if that's the right way to say it, so I don't want anybody to take that the way it sounds, but if that's what we're hearing, then we're going to have to do it. Somebody's going to have to do it. But if we want time to check with these guys and talk to them, I'm okay with that. But I don't want to let this slip through if we got a chance of helping people that need help.
We can't turn
our back on those people.
If I may, Commissioner, the issue that correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, Commissioner Metz and Commissioner Nowak have mentioned is that their question is about whether or not these guys want to be involved at all.
And the long and short of it over there, a lot of people that needed to help the most didn't get it because of rules and
And by the time it was changed, by the time the rules were changed, we ran out of time. Is what part of it was? Isn't that right, Rakesh? But we ran out of time at the end.
Yeah,
Commissioner, with all due respect, you're referring to Mission Northeast.
That's
okay. They ran on volunteers
only. I know exactly what they ran on.
They did 86 assistances out of thousands, and it wasn't just because the criteria was too stringent. We dropped that criteria in early September, and there was never very much criteria in the first place. That is a complaint that the constituents are saying because they thought that they were going to get a check mailed to them like the federal government had just done. But it's not just a matter of the criteria, and the criteria on the grants aren't changing any more than they're already at. But the nonprofits were running on very small staffs. They have one person cutting checks as a rule. Sometimes that was a volunteer. And they could not handle the volume. Now, we still have money with the CAC because that's the extremely low-income people, and they still have 6,000 people on their waiting list that they haven't gotten to since July. It is not just a matter of the criteria.
I just don't know. Whether you're doing it inadvertently or not, you are outing people. You're basically saying that CAC isn't able to do their job and take care of
No, they're doing a great job. They just had so many people.
In line.
They do.
It's just not the right place to air this.
We're trying to help the nonprofits by pulling the people back in-house. That was the goal of this plan.
I have the opportunity to talk with the nonprofits about this, see how we can get them involved. They are the ones that need to be helping. We don't need to be continually hiring people and growing our empires when we need to be just servicing the good of the people. So I've moved that we defer this item and talk with our nonprofits and come back into...
We withdraw the... Can we, Amy, withdraw the first motion and second? Okay. And I would move to withdraw that.
And I'll move that we defer this to give us...
defer it to our next, and let's find out what's going on behind the scenes. And get with you, Dr. Sharm.
Beverly, did you get that?
Can I make one more question?
They're deferring.
Can I ask one more
12
question?
A and B.
Would involve us deferring also B as well,
A
since
B
is contingent.
No, I get that. I get that. I'm asking because part of the plan was the $2.4 million going out to the nonprofits that are not housing related. Their clients have needs, extreme needs. Most of these are special needs organizations, but they're not housing related. Can you go ahead and approve funding those 12 nonprofits for their funding?
So this is money that's going directly to nonprofits?
Yeah.
Hiring it. You don't need any staff. You don't need anything to cut the checks and get it in their hands.
No.
And as far?
I mean, I have my staff is going to be monitoring them and doing the auditing and stuff, but...
That is already in place, isn't it?
What?
For them to be able to, the monies to those nonprofits to cover this, or is this in addition?
This is a separate thing. When we got round three CDBG funds, we gave about two-thirds of it to, we're proposing to give it to these nonprofits that do not do housing-related assistance.
Okay.
It's not rent utility.
Okay, so Amy, can we do this? Defer these two items right here. But that item is not noticed.
No. So yes, it would be under 12A, and the motion would be to consider and approve funding the nonprofit non-housing assistant program as set forth on the slide. I'm assuming that we could have slide number five. If someone would like to make that motion.
Move. Okay. Do we have a second?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, so we're going to assist on the non-housing side, and we're deferring rent, utility, and mortgage assistance.
B&B will be deferred. At this point,
okay.
Until next round. Until we... Yes. All right, is there anything else, gentlemen?
Yes, sir, good job.
On that, okay. Then let's move on to number 13, purchasing. Thank you, Dr. Ducharme.
Yeah, I'm trying to eject my...
We appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Okay, good morning again.
Good morning.
What we have here is we're asking you to approve these five mental health ad litem program attorneys. They're $40,000 apiece, and this is a program that's been in place since I've been here.
This is just...
Yeah.
Okay.
A motion to approve.
Move, yes. This is just reappointing the same...
Yes, sir.
Joanne Lynn.
Okay. Fair a second.
Got it.
You have a second? I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
All right. And then item two is consider and approve the award of Project 2117 for incinerator for animal services, and the bidder is M. Scott Construction of Katy with $315,000.
Wow.
The other two bidders, I don't know if you, tabulations that you have, the other two bidders were rejected. Those two bids were rejected because the vendors were altering our terms. They wanted 50-60% of the money up front before they did any of the work.
Were they any less?
By about $5,000. Yeah. They were all in the same ballpark.
Not enough.
But, $5,000. But we don't take those numbers seriously when they start altering our terms. If they had it, so.
Yeah.
And there is, we need a funding source named if you want to award this contract.
I mean, I'm just, we know there's $577,000 in contingency. We just use some for a truck. We use some for something else.
Yeah, the projected fund balance right now, if you were to do this, that would leave you $189,000 if you were to do this.
Is there another funding source? Can we take it from fund balance?
Fund balance?
Would be fund balance.
Yeah. I think that's the place it would need to take. We can't operate without an incinerator. Correct?
That's not a question for me.
I'm not asking you. Gentlemen?
Yeah.
Come on.
Amanda?
I think we know what the answer is going to be.
The answer is yes, right. We need a funding source. They need an incinerator.
But Amanda, how much? So when we, a year ago, we had 1,000 animals in the shelter. How many do you have right now?
Right now, around 200, but our intake is increasing steadily.
But I'm just saying, since October to now, there have to be some true savings, because we budgeted this animal shelter.
I haven't, on the salary side, yes, they definitely have, and that's gone into this vacancy projection. So far, they've accumulated over $34,000 with benefits closer to $50,000 in savings, you know, for that's gone to contingency. If they have an operational budget, we don't monitor that as closely as we do salary and benefits as on the department head. But I'm sure he could give you a little bit of an idea as to where his operational budget is. And then, but in that 577 number I gave you earlier, about 50 of that is related to the animal shelters. You know, they have lowered their staffing during when their animals are lower. So you're seeing significant savings. And so they are budgeting, in my opinion, properly for that. But unfortunately or unfortunately, that money you're seeing isn't part of that 577 number.
I mean, at one point, we were looking at should we try to sell this facility, build a new animal shelter because it's so outdated, it doesn't meet our needs, it's not large enough for when we're running, just put $315,000 into this. I mean, you're talking a 25% investment. I mean, it's a $1.5 million, $2 million building. Is it not better for us to sell the damn thing? And I mean, at some point we got to look at something. I don't want to put $315,000 in there.
I understand where you're coming from. It's kind of what we do in the interim as well to deal with it. I mean, I agree with you though that the facility is too small for what we're dealing with. I mean, we all know we have 1,000 square miles. The population is growing here. We have more and more an animal population that we're dealing with. Our intake is not going to go down. It's going to go up.
There's not a person up here that wants to spend $315,000 on incinerator to incinerate dead animals.
Yeah.
The reality is, if we decide that we want to build a new facility, put this money towards that, we're talking a year from now. What are we going to do between now and then?
A whole lot longer than a year.
You see, what? Just
service.
But
I mean,
even if it's
Harris
a year,
County several years before they ever got ground broken.
Exactly.
So
it needs to be done. You have looked into the service that the City of Houston uses, correct?
City of Houston goes to the city landfill. They don't have a service. Their waste management. City services come.
When we discussed this, though, there was a service, though, that you guys.
Harris County had a service that takes them away as well, and they don't know where they go.
Okay, that was the issue. They take them away and they put them in the landfill.
Okay,
basically, what you're saying.
How much does that cost? I kind of like that.
Yeah, they have no idea where they go.
Yeah, they go to doggy heaven, I guess.
Well, they go to doggy heaven. We know that.
I mean, no, we're yeah. I mean, how much is that?
So you're telling me we don't have to incinerate these animals? Is that what you're saying?
The proper way would be to incinerate
them. Are you saying that we don't have to incinerate these animals?
There is nothing that I'm aware of that requires us to, no.
Well, I think that's the answer.
How much is that?
I don't know, Gilbert. We looked into the contract. I don't know if we ever got an actual number from Harris County.
Can we get that number?
I did ask the question, as you recall, and it was, we didn't know where the end result was. We talked about just throwing the animals somewhere. That became a non-option in the scheme of things in terms of the public.
Better language than throwing animals somewhere.
They're disposed of just differently.
Can the incinerator, if it was installed, be transferred if you built a new facility at some point?
I would imagine it could be.
It shouldn't be something that's permanently managed.
What is the one we currently have?
I'm sorry?
How old is the one that we currently have?
Over 10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, that's a lot of money to put into. But if it could be, it's like a refrigerator. I mean,
sure.
It's not. But I'm just saying, if it could be moved.
It's large in size, and the way it sits on a slab and the gas going to it and stuff like that, I mean, there would still be some money to go into moving it, but I would imagine that they can move it.
Is that unit outside of the building, actually? Or is it connected to,
It's basically got a metal building-type shell around it is all it has.
So it's separate from the actual
interior facility. Of the actual building, yes.
Well, it can be moved.
Well, we could take it.
I mean, it's like, have you seen it?
I have.
Yeah, it's large.
Amanda, you're saying that we do have some monies in their account that if we had to, we could use towards this. Is that correct? $50,000 or whatever
that's,
it was?
It's technically part of your 577-918, that contingency number I gave earlier.
Okay.
That's the projected.
Okay. Then the balance would come from where? From fund balance?
Are you using it now?
We can't. It's
not
operational. Our freezer is unfortunately filling up.
So you're just...
They're not going to Conroe. We're just throwing.
Theirs has been broken. I think it's up now, but they've had issues with theirs as well. And theirs is not as large, so it's a lot harder when we have deer and things like that that are larger in size.
Who brings you deer?
I think you know the answer to that one.
I know.
Okay.
All right. I mean,
refresh my. Do we have a motion on this? Have we done a motion on this? Okay,
do we have
a motion to move forward on this with the funding being from fund, the only place I can think of would be fund balance? Do we have a motion to that? Is that correct? Do we have a motion to that effect? I move on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Otherwise we're going to need guidance to let it go, so...
I'll second it just so we can discuss it some more.
Okay. We have a motion and a second.
I'd like to find out the alternative.
So what's the alternative here?
If we approve this, how long will it take them to put this new incinerator in and get the old one out and get the new one in?
The requirements we put on it was for them to start within 6 weeks or something to that effect.
The other thing to think about, too, on this is it's $315,000. If the current one is lasting 10 years, let's just make an assumption that this one's going to last the same or more, hopefully. But that's about $31,000 a year.
Right.
So what we need to think about, too, is have we done the numbers to see if an outside, based on the number of volume that we do, if we could do it. I'm not sure we put an RFP out or anything to kind of see what the numbers look like on that. So that could be another option. I think Gilbert's probably going to give you that option. But there, you do have...
Remember, correct me if I'm wrong here, but we had a discussion on this once already, which we moved forward to go ahead and have Gilbert do to get the funding on this to find out where we were at. In my assumption, assuming we move forward on that because everybody agreed we need to do something with these animals. You're out of space with these animals. Conroe isn't taken. They can take a few.
Yeah.
We have no real place unless we just take these animals out,
correct,
find some empty county property somewhere, dig a hole,
and
pour some kerosene or whatever. I don't know. But we have to do something pretty quick here.
Yeah.
It's my concern with the animal shelter. We need to move on this, and this is a couple months old item.
And with this being the machine that we have there, too, is I don't know what the maintenance has been before I've come on board either. And that was part of some of the stuff when we had asked for some of the preventative maintenance budget was to be able to have somebody come out and maintain it and make sure that everything is running properly. And so I don't know what that history has been beyond the last three or four years.
It was in this maintenance that we found out that we had half this thing that
correct
was burning out
yeah
on the side.
Let me, so
dangerous, yeah.
I had something. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the contract with Harris County. Harris County has a contract with GLC Animal Disposal of Kingwood, and they charge by the size of the animal, but it's about $100 per animal to dispose of the animal. So
they say how they dispose of it?
Sir?
How do they dispose of it?
That's a good question. I haven't gotten that far in the contract, but...
I mean, because I remember, like the judge said, we did have an agreement to kind of move forward with this, but we didn't have... We didn't get the information that Harris County and the City of Houston were able to dispose of these animals differently. We just knew that the service was involved. But if it is considered just as humane in an acceptable way, and
I can tell you the City of Houston has had a lot of issues and a lot of very critical feedback in how they dispose their animals.
I mean, I'm not.
I'm just giving you the information.
Whether it's right or wrong, is there an option that is?
But I even go with the contract. If I remember correctly, I want to say it was around 45,000 a year, 50,000 a year. So, I mean, even if you split up what an incinerator is over the years, I mean, it ends up being a little less anyway.
$45,000 a year is a whole lot more palatable to me than $315,000 a day. Down the road, we can figure out what we may need to do. But if there's an option for $45,000, I say we take it and figure out what we're going to do with the animal shelter. And
I was just going by based on, like she was saying, splitting it up, it would end up being about $30,000 a year if you were to get 10 years lifespan out of it.
But I
think Gilbert's still looking to see if he can figure out what they do.
I don't know how they dispose of them. It's hard to read on this thing, but Harris County's contract went into effect in 2018, and they've spent around $150,000 a year.
It's not stated in the contract. In previous conversations with Harris County, they do not know where they go to. They just know that it's taken away.
Okay, if this is part of the discussion, then it would seem to me that we would need to know what are they doing with these animals. You would all agree with that, correct? So if that's the case, then we're not ready to make a decision on this today if we still want to open that up. So let's defer this until our next meeting. Let's do some more research on it. But we need to, somebody somewhere knows what the end result of these animals are,
Going. We'll get with the vendor that Harris County is using. They're in Kingwood. We'll get all that information, then we can bring it all back.
Because two more weeks is not going to impact. I mean, you've already got a full
freezer. How many animals a year are we incinerating?
We have an idea. I don't know because I don't know how many are being brought in.
And the reason I'm asking is, you know, you're talking about how large this is, and it is big. Are we buying a too big of a incinerator? Could we use a smaller incinerator?
We had talked with them about getting...
No kill circle.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, we had talked with them about getting a smaller one, but then... Because of what is already in place as well, so they would have to retrofit a lot of other things to make a smaller one work, and then you would end up almost just about at the same price as what you're paying for this one.
But this can be part of our research. So let's defer this until next round.
And so, Gilbert, you can get the different specs on a smaller version, what it would look like.
I mean, we can do that.
Find out what's happening to the animals.
Yeah, we can do the research. We can do the research on the current Harris County bid. Find out what that's all about. We'll get a ballpark number for a smaller incinerator.
Okay.
I mean.
So what we'll need to do is just do the. Pending research to find these answers to these questions. Fair enough?
Yep.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate that. All right. We're going to temporarily recess. Commissioners Court convene public hearings. Public hearing. Amy?
Would you like me to take these?
I'm sorry?
Would you like me to take these, Commissioners?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Would you please?
Consider the partial replat of Lot 6 and 7 in Block 1, the final plat of Gemstone Estates, a subdivision in Montgomery County, Texas, according to the map and plat thereof, recorded in Cabinet I, Sheet 122 of the map records in Montgomery County, to be known as replat of Lot 6 and 7, Block 1, Gemstone Estates. Is anybody here to speak about that? There's no objections or concerns received prior to today's public hearing. The notice was mailed to the HOA. The plat is not ready and may be submitted for approval at a later date. Is anybody here to talk about item A? Okay. If not, Precinct 2. Consider the partial replats of lots 34 and 35, Block 1, Phase 1A, Blue Jack National, according to the map or plat thereof, recorded in Cabinet Z, Sheet 3074 of the map records in Montgomery County, to be known as Phase 1A, Blue Jack National, partial replat number 3. The purpose of this proposed partial replat is to combine lines, lots 34 and 35 into one lot. No objections or concerns have been received. Notice has been mailed to the POA, and the plat submitted for commissioner approval is under agenda item 15C later in this agenda. Is anybody here to speak about this? Consider the partial replat of Reserve A in Block 1 of Granite Ridge Subdivision in Montgomery County, recorded in Cabinet C, Sheet 2799-2800 of Montgomery County Map Records, and also being replat of Lot 16 in Block 3 of Walnut Springs, a subdivision record in Cabinet A, Sheet 177A, to be known as Granite Ridge Estates. Is anybody here to speak about that? The plat's not ready and may be submitted at a future date. And item 1B, consider and approve changing the name of Longleaf Drive to Crest Park Drive in Wood Forest, Section 90. Is anybody here to speak about that? And Precinct 4, consider the partial replat of Amberlin Lewis F, Number 1, Tract 4, Lot 22, a subdivision in Montgomery County, Texas, according to the map or plat thereof, recording Cabinet Z, Sheet 6820 of the map records in Montgomery County, being 14.985 acres of land, more or less, in the Amberlong Survey A-62 Montgomery County, to be known as Freedom Estates Replat Number 1. The purpose of this partial replat is to create a new block of two lots. No objections or concerns have been received prior to today's public hearing. The HOA has not been found in the real property record search. The plat is submitted for Commissioner's Court approval by the county engineer under item 15B in a minute. Is anybody here to speak about it? And finally, consider the partial replat, Lot 16, Tanglewild Farms, Section 2, Volume 5, page 183 of the map records in Montgomery County, Texas, to be known as Conroe Estate Section 1. The purpose of this proposed partial replat is to subdivide the tract into three separate lots. No objections or concerns have been received prior to today's public hearing. The HOA is not found in the real property record search. The plat submitted is has been submitted for approval under agenda item 15A in a minute. Is anybody here to speak about that?
Okay. All right, then we'll go ahead and reconvene and take appropriate action. And the action in these items
we need,
is on 14B1, 14B, correct?
Yeah, 14B1.
Do we have a motion to that effect?
Move.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And all right, county engineer.
We need a motion on 15A,
A,
B,
and C.
And C.
Do we have a motion to that effect?
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Amy. Appreciate your help on that. Now, as we are coming close to our closing, are there any citizen comments that anyone would like to make before our closing? If not, then do we have a motion to adjourn?
Move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much for being here today.